May 12th. As we look into the Old Testament today, we'll be reading from 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 1, through chapter 13, verse 23. And we'll see as we read in 1 Samuel chapter 12 that Samuel's message was the combination of a coronation address, a revival sermon, and a farewell speech. He pointed out the greatness of the people's sin, the entire nation of Israel, in asking for a king, and then called for new dedication. A key theme in the address is witness, as we'll see. What kind of witness? Well, the witness of a godly leader. The people had rejected a proven godly leader for a man who had won only one victory and whose devotion to the Lord was as yet unknown. Samuel was disappointed, but he left office knowing that his conscience was clear. And then there's the witness of history. The hand of the Lord was with them when they obeyed, but it was against them when they rebelled. Verse 14 here emphasizes the same secret of success that God gave to Joshua. Rebellion became King Saul's besetting sin, and it cost him his kingdom. And then there's the witness of God's power. What a man of prayer Samuel was, for it was most unusual to have thunder and rain at that time of year. And then there's the witness of the covenant. The people had forsaken God, but he would not forsake them, for he is true to his word. They had the assurance of God's faithfulness as well as the prayers and ministry of Samuel. Had the king maintained his friendship with Samuel and obeyed the word, he would have led the nation to victory. And then as we move on into our reading of 1 Samuel chapter 13, we'll see Saul's second crisis came after he started to build a standing army. And he failed in four ways in this crisis. He failed to act decisively. It was Jonathan, not Saul, who declared war by attacking one of the Philistine garrisons. Saul took the credit and blew the trumpet to rally the people. Now, he failed to inspire the people. That was another failure. Some ran away, some hid, some left the country. You know, people still dodged the military in some ways. Now, those who were faithful were fearful and the future looked bleak. His third failure was he failed to wait. This was the first step in his rupture with Samuel and his rebellion against the Lord. Patience is a mark of good character. And of course, we see that Saul's character was weak. And finally, he failed to tell the truth. When David sinned, he came with confessions. When Saul sinned, he had only excuses. He lied to his best friend, and it cost him his crown. And Saul would do it again. From that point, his course was all downhill. And with that, let's begin today's reading in the Old Testament. May 12th, 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 1, through chapter 13, verse 23. Then Samuel addressed the people again. "I have done as you asked, and given you a king. I have selected him ahead of my own sons, and I stand here an old, gray-haired man. I have served as your leader since I was a boy. Now tell me, as I stand before the Lord and before his anointed one, whose ox or donkey have I stolen? Have I ever cheated any of you? Have I ever oppressed you? Have I ever taken a bribe? Tell me, and I will make right whatever I have done wrong." "No," they replied, "you have never cheated or oppressed us in any way, and you have never taken even a single bribe." "The Lord and his anointed one are my witnesses," Samuel declared, "that you can never accuse me of robbing you." "Yes, it is true," they replied. "It was the Lord who appointed Moses and Aaron," Samuel continued. "He brought your ancestors out of the land of Egypt. Now stand here quietly before the Lord, as I remind you of all the great things the Lord has done for you and your ancestors. When the Israelites were in Egypt and cried out to the Lord, he sent Moses and Aaron to rescue them from Egypt and to bring them into this land. But the people soon forgot about the Lord their God. So he let them be conquered by Sisera, the general of Hazor's army, and by the Philistines and the king of Moab. Then they cried to the Lord again and confessed, 'We have sinned, by turning away from the Lord and worshiping the images of Baal and Ashtoreth. But we will worship you and you alone if you will rescue us from our enemies. Then the Lord sent Gideon, Barak, Jephthah, and Samuel to save you, and you lived in safety. But when you were afraid of Nahash, the king of Ammon, you came to me and said that you wanted a king to reign over you, even though the Lord your God was already your king. All right, here is the king you have chosen. Look him over, you ask for him, and the Lord has granted your request. Now, if you will fear and worship the Lord and listen to his voice, and if you do not rebel against the Lord's commands, and if you and your king follow the Lord your God, then all will be well. But if you rebel against the Lord's commands and refuse to listen to him, then his hand will be as heavy upon you as it was upon your ancestors. Now stand here and see the great thing the Lord is about to do. You know that it does not rain at this time of the year during the wheat harvest. I will ask the Lord to send thunder and rain today. Then you will realize how wicked you have been in asking the Lord for a king. So Samuel called to the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain, and all the people were terrified of the Lord and of Samuel. "Pray to the Lord your God for us, or we will die," they cried out to Samuel. "For now we have added to our sins by asking for a king." "Don't be afraid," Samuel reassured them. "You have certainly done wrong, but make sure now that you worship the Lord with all your heart and that you don't turn your back on him in any way. Don't go back to worshiping worthless idols that cannot help or rescue you. They really are useless. The Lord will not abandon his chosen people, for that would dishonor his great name. He made you a special nation for himself. As for me, I will certainly not sin against the Lord by ending my prayers for you, and I will continue to teach you what is good and right. But be sure to fear the Lord and sincerely worship him. Think of all the wonderful things he has done for you. But if you continue to sin, you and your king will be destroyed." Saul was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 42 years. Saul selected 3,000 special troops from the army of Israel and sent the rest of the men home. He took 2,000 of the chosen men with him to Michmash and the hill country of Bethel. The other 1,000 went with Saul's son Jonathan to Gibeah in the land of Benjamin. Soon after this, Jonathan attacked and defeated the garrison of Philistines at Geba. The news spread quickly among the Philistines that Israel was in revolt. So Saul sounded the call to arms throughout Israel. He announced that the Philistine garrison at Geba had been destroyed, and he warned the people that the Philistines now hated the Israelites more than ever. So the entire Israelite army mobilized again and met Saul at Gilgal. The Philistines mustered a mighty army of 3,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and as many warriors as the grains of sand along the seashore. They camped at Michmash, east of Beth Aven. When the men of Israel saw the vast number of enemy troops, they lost their nerve entirely and tried to hide in caves, holes, rocks, tombs, and cisterns. Some of them crossed the Jordan River and escaped into the land of Gad and Gilead. Meanwhile, Saul stayed at Gilgal, and his men were trembling with fear. Saul waited there 7 days for Samuel, as Samuel had instructed him earlier. But Samuel didn't come. Saul realized that his troops were rapidly slipping away. So he demanded, "Bring me the burnt offering and the peace offerings." And Saul sacrificed the burnt offering himself. Just as Saul was finishing with the burnt offering, Samuel arrived. Saul went out to meet and welcome him. But Samuel said, "What is this you have done?" Saul replied, "I saw my men scattering from me, and you didn't arrive when you said you would, and the Philistines are at Michmash ready for battle." So I said, "The Philistines are ready to march against us, and I haven't even asked for the Lord's help." so I felt obliged to offer the burnt offering myself before you came." "How foolish!" Samuel exclaimed. "You have disobeyed the command of the Lord your God. Had you obeyed, the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your dynasty must end, for the Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. The Lord has already chosen him to be king over his people, for you have not obeyed the Lord's command." Samuel then left Gilgal and went on his way, but the rest of the troops went with Saul to meet the army. They went up from Gilgal to Gibeah in the land of Benjamin. When Saul counted the men who were still with him, he found only 600 left. Saul and Jonathan and the troops with them were staying at Geba, near Gibeah, in the land of Benjamin. The Philistines set up their camp at Michmash. 3 raiding parties soon left the camp of the Philistines. One went north toward Ophrah in the land of Shual. Another went west to Beth Horon, and the third moved toward the border above the valley of Ziboim near the wilderness. There were no blacksmiths in the land of Israel in those days. The Philistines wouldn't allow them, for fear they would make swords and spears for the Hebrews. So whenever the Israelites needed to sharpen their plowshares, picks, axes, or sickles, they had to take them to a Philistine blacksmith. The schedule of charges was as follows: 1/4 ounce of silver for sharpening a plowshare or a pick, and 1/8 ounce for sharpening an axe, a sickle, or an ox goad. So none of the people of Israel had a sword or spear, except for Saul and Jonathan. The pass at Michmash had meanwhile been secured by a contingent of the Philistine army. May 12th. Our reading in the New Testament today takes place in the book of John, chapter 7, verses 1 through 30. And here in John chapter 7, we see how the world thinks. Because he was doing his Father's will, Jesus lived on a divine timetable. And so should we. That's the point. The world does not understand this and will give you advice contrary to God's will. Be on your guard and guard your heart. Live on God's schedule and you'll always have God's help. We'll also see as we read in chapter 7 how the world decides. This discussion reveals the confusion and unbelief of the people. Some were for him because of his miracles, while others opposed him because he broke the Sabbath laws, or supposedly broke the Sabbath laws. Some waited to see what their leaders would do, and their leaders wanted to kill him. They were judging by appearances and going astray. And then we'll see what the world needs. One ritual during the Feast of Tabernacles was the pouring out of water in the temple. It was a reminder that God gave Israel water in the wilderness. Water for drinking pictures the Holy Spirit, who is given to those who trust Christ. The world is thirsty and can find its thirst quenched only by coming to Christ. And with that, let's begin our reading today in the New Testament. May 12th, the book of John, chapter 7, verses 1 through 30. After this, Jesus stayed in Galilee, going from village to village. He wanted to stay out of Judea, where the Jewish leaders were plotting his death. But soon it was time for the festival of shelters, and Jesus' brothers urged him to go to Judea for the celebration. "Go where your followers can see your miracles," they scoffed. "You can't become a public figure if you hide like this. If you can do such wonderful things, prove it to the world." For even his brothers didn't believe in him. Jesus replied, "Now is not the right time for me to go, but you can go any time and it will make no difference. The world can't hate you, but it does hate me because I accuse it of sin and evil. You go on. I am not yet ready to go to this festival, because my time has not yet come." So Jesus remained in Galilee. But after his brothers had left for the festival, Jesus also went, though secretly, staying out of public view. The Jewish leaders tried to find him at the festival and kept asking if anyone had seen him. There was a lot of discussion about him among the crowds. Some said, "He's a wonderful man," while others said, "He's nothing but a fraud, deceiving the people." But no one had the courage to speak favorably about him in public, for they were afraid of getting in trouble with the Jewish leaders. Then, midway through the festival, Jesus went up to the temple and began to teach. The Jewish leaders were surprised when they heard him. "How does he know so much when he hasn't studied everything we've studied?" they asked. So Jesus told them, "I'm not teaching my own ideas, but those of God who sent me. Anyone who wants to do the will of God will know whether my teaching is from God or is merely my own. Those who present their own ideas are looking for praise for themselves, but those who seek to honor the one who sent them are good and genuine. None of you obeys the law of Moses. In fact, you are trying to kill me." The crowd replied, "You're demon-possessed. Who's trying to kill you?" Jesus replied, "I worked on the Sabbath by healing a man, and you were offended. But you work on the Sabbath too when you obey Moses' law of circumcision." Actually, this tradition of circumcision is older than the law of Moses. It goes back to Abraham. "For if the correct time for circumcising your son falls on the Sabbath, you go ahead and do it, so as not to break the law of Moses. So why should I be condemned for making a man completely well on the Sabbath? Think this through, and you will see that I am right." Some of the people who lived there in Jerusalem said among themselves, "Isn't this the man they are trying to kill? But here he is, speaking in public, and they say nothing to him. Can it be that our leaders know that he is really the Messiah? But how could he be? For we know where this man comes from. When the Messiah comes, he will simply appear. No one will know where he comes from." While Jesus was teaching in the temple, he called out, "Yes, you know me, and you know where I come from. But I represent one you don't know, and he is true. I know him because I have come from him, and he sent me to you." Then the leaders tried to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him because his time had not yet come. Today we're reading Psalm 108, verses 1 through 13. And in this psalm, David makes three affirmations. He says, "I will praise." A steadfast heart is a singing heart, because confidence in God gives you something to sing about. David arose early in the morning to sing to the Lord. Worship is a very good preparation for warfare. And he says, "I will listen." God heard the voice of David, and then David listened to the voice of God. It was a word of assurance as the king went out to battle. "All nations are mine, and I can do with them as I please." And then David said, "I will conquer." He made that bold statement. He believed in God. God leads us into the battle, helps us capture the enemy's strongholds, and gives us the victory. And verse 13, as we read here in Psalm 108, is David's version of Philippians chapter 4, verse 13. It was true for him, and it is true for you today. And that truth is, I will conquer. Psalm 108, verses 1 through 13. A psalm of David, a song. "My heart is confident in you, O God. No wonder I can sing your praises. Wake up, my soul. Wake up, O harp and lyre. I will waken the dawn with my song. I will thank you, Lord, in front of all the people. I will sing your praises among the nations. For your unfailing love is higher than the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the highest heavens. May your glory shine over all the earth. Use your strong right arm to save me and rescue your beloved people. God has promised this by his holiness. I will divide up Shechem with joy. I will measure out the valley of Succoth. Gilead is mine, and Manasseh is mine. Ephraim will produce my warriors, and Judah will produce my kings. Moab will become my lowly servant, and Edom will be my slave. I will shout in triumph over the Philistines. But who will bring me into the fortified city? Who will bring me victory over Edom? Have you rejected us, O God? Will you no longer march with our armies? Oh, please help us against our enemies, for all human help is useless. With God's help, we will do mighty things, for he will trample down our foes. Proverbs 15, verse 4. Gentle words bring life and health. A deceitful tongue crushes the spirit.